Looking to diversify your business portfolio with a high-growth opportunity? Discover Mathnasium Learning Centers, the number one math-only education franchise. For more than 20 years, Mathnasium has triumphed in a booming multi-billion dollar tutoring industry with over 1,200 centers worldwide. Ranked on Entrepreneur's Franchise 500 list for 11 consecutive years, Mathnasium is low-cost, recession-resistant, and offers significant growth potential in an expanding market. The demand for math education is skyrocketing, driven by declining math scores and the growing need for STEM skills in today's workforce. What makes Mathnasium a smart investment? Affordable entry point and quick build-out time. High-earning centers with seven-figure annual revenue, industry-leading 30% plus average profit margins, and it's a trusted brand with high consumer satisfaction scores. And here's something extra. They're offering a 25% discount on the franchise fee for former teachers and veterans. So whether you're expanding your franchise portfolio or making your first investment, Mathnasium gives you the systems and support you need to succeed. Get your free franchise information kit at mathnasiumfranchise.com or call 888-763-2604. That's mathnasiumfranchise.com or call 888-763-2604. Hey, it's Dan Bova from Entrepreneur Media, and welcome to How Success Happens, the show where I talk to awesome people who do awesome things and ask the simple question, how on earth did you do that? All right, people, buckle up because today's guest brings the energy. I have had the pleasure of knowing Kim Perrell for years now, and I have yet to end a conversation with her without feeling fired up. Kim Perrell is a nine-time founder, a best-selling author, investor in over 100 companies, and a proud mom of four. And if you are a fan of Entrepreneur, you've seen her on just about every season of our show, Elevator Pitch. She's also about to co-host an incredible Entrepreneur Live event in Las Vegas on August 22nd to the 23rd called Level Up, which I will definitely be at, and you should too. She's also got a new book out called Mistakes That Made Me a Millionaire that Mark Randolph, the co-founder of Netflix, calls indispensable reading. Pretty high praise. Welcome, Kim.
Oh, thank you so much, Dan. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah. Wow. When you hear that list of all the things you've done a lot more than that than I squeezed into that intro, are you just like, damn, Kim, I am getting it.
I'm like, oh my gosh, no, I'm just warming up over here, right? Like, we're just getting started.
That's incredible. So we always start off by asking guests for their personal definition of the word success. What does it mean to you now, and how has it changed over the years?
For me right now, at this point in my career, success for me is how many lives I can positively impact. So that's my definition of success. I think if you would have asked my 21-year-old me, right, I think it would be definitely more monetary.
Yeah.
So it changes over time, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of 21-year-old you, 23-year-old you did something pretty incredible. You started a company from your kitchen table, and you became a multimillionaire by the time you were 30. So I'm no longer 30, but I do have a kitchen table. So tell me how to do it.
Oh my gosh. Anyone that has a kitchen table or a garage, a basement, a WeWork, coffee shop, right? You can start a business from anywhere. I started mine at my kitchen table. I got a $10,000 loan from my grandma. And honestly, I sat at that kitchen table and people say, how long do you, it's an overnight success. There's no overnight success. I sat at my kitchen table for 3 years, 16 hours a day, just grinding it out, as every entrepreneur knows, right? It is hard. It's lonely. But you have to be tenacious. And I think you have to, when everyone else would give up, you have to keep pushing forward. And I think that is why I have been successful, is just continuing to push forward despite the setbacks and the challenges. But at 23, I started an internet company, and it was right after the dot-com bubble burst. I think it's really important because people say, oh, it's never, you know, even let's just take now, never a good time to start. The economy is terrible. Well, I started when the economy was terrible, right? Mm. People thought the internet was a fad.
Right.
I started an internet company. People were like, you're too young. You have no experience. You have no money. And the internet is over. And having the courage to believe in your dreams, regardless of the naysayers and the critics, and that, you know, all those people are going to tell you why you can't do something, why you shouldn't do something, is what makes you successful. It's just continuing to have that vision and do it anyway. And I had that vision at 23 and built that company. I mean, honestly, you know, night after night. And as the internet grew, my business grew, which was amazing. So I think just believing in something so much that despite the doubts of everyone else, yeah, you know, is really what drives success.
Is there something that, you know, it's an inspiring thing you just said. It's incredible. But for those, when you're in it, when you are being told, this is a bad idea, look at your numbers, this is not working, what do you just dig down deep? Where does that tenacity come from where, you know, a lot of people go, maybe they're right, maybe this is a bad idea?
Yeah, I think, well, a lot of companies can't find product market fit. So if you actually can't make money doing what you want to create, the product or service, that's just a hobby. And I think realizing that. So it's about getting to the minimum viable product, getting to market and seeing if the customers will actually pay for the product or service, right? And I think if no one's paying, you need to pivot or you need to find another way to bring your dream alive. But the market will dictate your success or failure.
Yeah, right. And things worked out very well for you. So that's great. It's nice when good things happen to good people. But you, as you write in this book, you know, what every move you made wasn't exactly perfect. Mistakes that made me a millionaire. So the book is out. I just want to let everyone know it's out August 12th. And there was just so many amazing moments that you write about. And I thought we could talk about a couple of them. You've got this story about this moment at JFK and how it forced you to finally listen to your intuition. So can you tell us that story?
Yeah. So I sold my last company in 2014 for $235 million to Singapore Telecommunications, which was an amazing experience. And with a sale, you get an earnout. And that basically means you're tied to the company to ensure a very smooth transition. Usually an earnout is from 2 to 3 years. I end up staying almost 6 years. So the mistake for me was staying too long. And not because I wasn't happy, but because I wasn't growing. And I think you actually have to really look at where you are. And that moment in JFK when I was trying to catch a flight and I'm running to the, you know, running through the airport and I slip and fall and twist my ankle and can't move. And just thinking, what am I doing? Right. Like I had 4 kids, 5 and under. Something has to break. And and it did. And I think for me, it was recognizing that at that moment, sometimes you have to, you know, there's a great art of war, retreat to attack. Sometimes you just have to step back and it's okay. Right. And just step back and be like, what is my vision? What am I doing? Cause you get so, you're on the, you know, the cycle, you're on the treadmill, you keep going, but you're not thinking of, am I living up to my greatest potential? Is this the best and highest use of my time? And you get comfortable, right? And like we all do. I was comfortable. It was a great place to be. And I had a lot of great friends, but the best and highest use of my time is in creating and innovative and startup, you know, like I love to build. So having that moment that makes you reflect on what next. And I think there's so many people probably right now that are listening thinking, and you should be thinking, am I staying too long? If you're asking yourself, am I staying too long? You are. Like, that's the answer, right? And I think after 3 years, you're staying too long. Like, there's opportunity and statistics show that you will make more actually if you leave where you're at and get another opportunity, unless you're earning or learning. So if you continue to get promoted, you continue to get a raise, or you're learning from skill sets, great, stay where you are. But if you're not doing either one of those, you are in your comfort zone and you got to make a change.
That's great. And What I love there too is that you recognize like what it is that you actually, we talk about passion all the time, and you understood my passion is for building new things, not staying at this one place forever. So that's, I think that's an important lesson we could all learn from.
Yeah. Yeah. You never know. I mean, I started my kitchen table and went to run a $1 billion company out of Singapore. So if I can do it, anyone can do it. But then also knowing, like, am I happy?
Right.
Or am I just doing it because this is where I'm at? And I mean, I'm so grateful. It was such a great opportunity. But I actually would rather be, you know, wandering through the woods trying to figure out what to do next.
Right. You have this other mistake you write about that, you know, gives me a heart attack just saying it out loud. The mistake that cost you $100 million. Can you talk a little bit about that? You know, speaking of this thing about clinging to something that maybe isn't right for you anymore or isn't working anymore.
Oh my gosh. I don't know if it cost me $100 million, but it definitely cost me at least five. I think, how do we acknowledge like what's working and what's not working and have the courage to make change? I think sometimes it's actually easier to stay than go, right? Like it's easier to just stay where you are and keep, but are you living like your life to the highest and best use of your skills and talents? That's what we should be asked. Like, are you energized? You get up so excited to do whatever it is that you're doing each day, because that excitement is amazing. And once I actually stepped back and started new companies, the energy and the excitement, it's like you're in a zone. It's like a flow state that you just get up and you can't wait to create. And you forget about all of that, actually. You forget that was there. For me, I forgot, oh, I love that stage, right? I want to sit back at my kitchen table. And one of that, and that's why I love entrepreneurs. I want to sit with them and like, let's think about how we're going to build something from the ground up.
That's great. Well, what about this this sort of other end of the spectrum is that when you're not just feeling, you're not feeling energized, you're not feeling bored, but you are feeling panicked. I am not the right person for this. I shouldn't be doing this. People think I'm smarter than I am. Imposter syndrome. Has that been a factor in your life? And how have you overcome that, if so?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Oh, so many times. I think, so I grew up as a twin, and so I have a twin sister. So I was always in competition with someone else, and she was always smarter and faster and better. You know, we took tests, she'd ace them. Genetically, we're the same, but for some reason, she always did better. So, you know, I always had, was thinking, why am I the dummy of the family here? Obviously not, but just we had different skills and talents. But I think that from a young age, just having that built-in competitor, for me, I was always thinking, it's like a limiting belief, which is I'm not the smart one, which is completely incorrect and false. But we limit ourselves based on things we heard when we were, let's just say, in my case, 10 years old. It takes like a decade to realize, actually, that is a wrong limiting belief. And I'm self-imposing it on myself.
Right.
And I need to, you know, remove that in order to really shine. And so I'm sure a lot of people that are listening can relate to either one, having a sister, brother, sibling that was always better than them, or having something happen like in your childhood where it labeled you. And those labels don't have to stick, right? Who you were when you were 10 is completely different than who you are at 20, 30, 40, et cetera. So, you know, but I definitely, you know, there's so many times when I thought, I mean, when I started my first company, I had no idea what I was doing, but I had the confidence to believe I would learn on the way. But still, there's many times, and I talk about in the book, that I turned down opportunities because I didn't think I was smart enough, or I didn't think I was qualified enough to be able to take them. And what, you know, I regret that. What a sad, I shouldn't have let myself do that. And, you know, my hope is that people will learn from my mistakes of holding myself back and not make those same decisions and say yes more, even if you don't feel qualified.
Right. Now, do you ever call your sister and go like, oh, hey, how many businesses did you sell for $250 million?
Hey, you're the smart one. No, she has one set of twins and I have two sets of twins. So I'm like, I won you finally. Very smart. Oh my.
That's fantastic. Is there something, I mean, is there like a mantra or just something, you know, we all have that moment where we just, you know, a new opportunity arises and I don't think I'm ready for it. And maybe it's not because of when I was a kid, but just like, I'm just doubting my ability to do it. Is there something that you tell yourself in those moments of doubt that help get your courage back up?
Yeah, I have a highlight reel on my phone that I look at that has times that I was really proud of myself, right? Whether it being winning Entrepreneur of the Year or selling my company or speaking on a big stage. And it's a reminder to myself and my subconscious of the things that I have done and why I also take chances that I might feel scared to do, but actually in doing them, I feel so proud actually after the moment. If I just can get rid of the fear and do them,
yeah,
it happens and you feel so good, to be honest.
That's awesome. I love that because I'm always like, why in the human consciousness, why can we always remember the bad things that happened to us like they happened a second ago and the good things like, yay. And then like 10 minutes later, you're just like back in it. Like, I love that, having that cheat sheet to be like, no, good things happen and they make you feel good.
To your point, we have a negative bias, right? So let's just say on social media, you get 100 comments or 10 comments and one of them's bad. Then you just think about like,
yes,
this right. bad. I changed my entire business model. It's like one person is saying that you just happen to fixate. Or even if you're getting a review with your manager and they say one thing that, you know, you could work on, you just take that so personally. And so it's trying to remember our minds have a negative bias and how do we counteract that with reminding ourselves of all the great things that we are doing.
That's great. That's awesome. I love that. Speaking of other people in our lives, you know, as entrepreneurs grow their businesses, we have to hire people. And you write about a problem or mistake of ignoring red flags. You hired a seemingly perfect head of sales who looked great on paper, but it didn't really work out. What did that mistake teach you about leadership and also just trusting those instincts where someone's just rubbing you the wrong way and you're trying to convince yourself, no, they're fine. I'm just being stupid or whatever it is.
I think hiring's hard, right? And I think we've all been in the situation where you meet someone, they're charismatic and their resume looks perfect on paper. I think dating or in business, you know, the perfect on paper, they look great. They went to the best school. They had their job. And then you know, over time, obviously they're not perfect on paper. They're not perfect for you. So maybe they are perfect for someone else, which is amazing. But then they get in like I did and I hired, a very expensive head of sales and that looked perfect. And then the reality was, it did not work out. And that did cost me millions because, you know, I was really counting on that. I lost millions in revenue based on hiring the wrong person. And the mistake I made, I double made my mistake because first I made the mistake, obviously, of picking the wrong person. Then I made the mistake of my ego didn't want to believe that I had made this mistake. And so it took me a second to just kind of say, like, admit to myself and my team that I'd made the wrong hiring decision and I had to make a change. Cause for a while I'm like, it'll be fine. We'll figure it out. To your point, we'll figure it out and it will work out, but it's not going to work out. Right.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And that's what I learned. Actually, the biggest learning is if you know, like your gut knows. So whether it's today or another 6 months, eventually the person will be moving on their way to their next opportunity, which hopefully works out really well for them. But staying and clinging on when your gut instinct knows, like, and the red flags are just flying and you're going and you're still like, no, we're just going to make this work. Cut it loose earlier, right?
Move on. And what about the sort of reverse situation where, you know, the situation that I've been in, whereas you hire someone, everything is going great. And then one Friday afternoon, they go, hey, do you have a minute? And they quit. Which over time you start to realize that's life. You've quit jobs before, you've done things, but you know, your initial reaction is like, what did I do wrong? And then you have to tell someone else, oh, I hired this person who quit 4 months later. It's embarrassing. Have you ever had a situation like that?
Yes. Oh my gosh. To your point, the call where they're like, I talk about this. Kim, can we talk? I'm like, oh, I don't want to call you back. When you say, Kim, can we talk? I know it's bad news. So like, no, no, we can't talk. I won't talk to you. Right? I mean,
Yeah.
it's either, yes, to your point, someone's going to resign. Like, oh, can I speak to you? You're like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Unexpectedly, or they're going to tell me something went wrong. But
Right.
I think the mistake on that is it's okay to make mistakes. Like, the reason I wrote the book was because today it's a picture perfect world about entrepreneurship. And I could write a book about all the wins I had, but the reality is my mistakes is where I learn the most.
Right,
And
right,
so
right.
I want to be vulnerable and share all the things that went wrong. Like, I've had so many challenges and so many setbacks, and I still became successful. And so my success is not because I didn't make mistakes. It's actually because I made mistakes, learned from them, and then moved forward. The biggest mistake, I failed, but I do not consider myself a failure, right? And I think that's important. People can
Yeah.
fail. You can make mistakes, but don't define or label yourself that failure. You have to be able to move forward and say, that was just something on that happened, a chapter in my book, per se.
Yeah, no, that's such great advice. And it makes me think also about you talking about, speaking of quitting, quitting on ourselves or maybe like jumping ship too soon. You say you mentally quit for 14 nights in a row. So could you talk about that? And then what, how'd you get out of that?
Yeah. I mean, we've all been there, right? Where it's just so hard and you think, okay, I can't do this any longer. And every night you go to bed and say, I quit. And then every morning you're like, okay, I'm renewed energy. I can do this. And every
Yeah.
night it's so hard. You go, I quit. And every day you wake up. I'm sure people can relate. It's 3 a.m.
Yeah.
I'm sitting in bed going, I can't do this anymore.
Right.
And how I think there's quitting too soon. And I think there's a lot of great stories about people who quit too soon. You know, I'd love to tell you I'm the fourth hire at Amazon and I quit too soon. And I lost all my stock. And that's not the case. But I have had many companies that I invested in that I've helped co-found that I wanted to quit. And that time, it's really about thinking for yourself, you should quit. And I think it's really, really honest. If it's an emotional, physical, or mental like impact on your health or well-being, for sure you should quit, right? But if it's just a series of bad luck, which in my case it was, you can, you know, mentally, you have to be mentally strong. If you can continue to go on and it's not impacting you again emotionally or physically or mentally, great, or financially, right? Like, if you're going to bet the farm and your family, please quit, right? We don't want you to.
Yeah.
I've seen it. You know, I grew up in a house, my dad was always near bankruptcy. And he should have quit, right? Like, Dad, you're betting the farm every. I couldn't take it. But so I think just learning from that lesson, like, honestly, if it's going to impact your financial, like your actual family, you should
Yeah.
probably quit. And me learning when is it okay to quit, when it's not okay to quit, right? Maybe you just need rest. And so he says, take the weekend, take a nap, just take a break, and you'll come back with another. With a renewed sense of clarity. And maybe the answer is quit, but I think a lot of people quit too soon. I think I'm successful because I keep going long after everyone else would have given up.
Right. That's great. It's funny, and I know she wrote she gave a nice review of your book, but I spoke to Barbara Corcoran not too long ago, and she gave a similar prescription, which was she said, when she was starting off her business and she was having a bad day, she would just get up from her desk, get on the subway and go to Jones Beach and spend the day at the beach and come back the next day just feeling like mentally renewed.
Yeah.
And it's a, we want to like fight through this problem, but sometimes you got to give it a break.
I
But
agree. I
on
think
that
when you
take.
look like I think Dan, when you look at that, you know, I compare athletes and entrepreneurs. Like, they're very much similar
Yeah.
mindset, right? But the athletes usually have a break. Entrepreneurs are 24/7, 365 days. There's no like off season. It's like game on all the time, right? They need an off season. I need an off season, right? Like, that's my off season, Dan. I never get it. But recognizing that as an individual and saying, okay, I have to make my own off season. So I love her advice. Yeah, take a break, you know,
That's
step back.
great. That's awesome. So we at How Success Happens, we have an email, howsuccesshappens@entrepreneur.com, where our listeners can write in questions. And we got a question for you, Kim. This was submitted by Greg M. He wants to know, what are some ways to test out an idea before I spend a lot of time and money on it?
Yeah, that's great. And I appreciate that because, again, a lot of entrepreneurs spend a lot of time and money and then they get to market and the idea does not work. So I would say, how do we get to the minimum viable product that you can go to market with, right? So just the simplest form, if it costs too much to create the product, right? If your product is something, I don't know, something else, like maybe a CPG, you should be able to create that. But if it's too much, but at least then, do you have a deck? I mean, like for me, this is how entrepreneurs are built, right? You have a bit deck that shows the opportunity. Will someone invest in it? If you can't get someone to buy it, and you can't get someone to invest in it, it's very hard for me to think it's a commercially viable business. Yeah. So I think really looking back at how do I get just something very simple to go to market? I'm not going to boil the ocean. Just give me a prototype. Or how can I get someone else to give me feedback that they actually put money against it?
That's awesome. I love it. And, you know, our pal Mark Randolph, he always talks about, can you make it on an index card before you build a huge website?
Yes. Oh my gosh, with automation and ChatGPT and, you know, all of AI, think of how simple it is today to just create that prototype, right? And I think that's where we should be looking at trying to get our ideas to market faster. And listen, I'm not saying create a 10-page pitch deck, 100-page, this is where you get stuck in analysis paralysis, you do too much work, and then you go to market and no one wants it. Please don't do that. I think it's get the shortest index card is a good idea.
That's great. Well, thanks for the question, Greg. If you've got a question, please hit us at howsuccesshappens@entrepreneur.com. So Kim, are you ready for it? This is the speed round.
Let's do it. Yeah.
All right. Imagine a ding ding noise just went off. What is a habit you are happy to have and one you wish you could ditch?
Okay, happy. I love exercise. So I exercise every day. It's just I'm game on all the time. One I wish I could ditch. I love sweets too. So it's counterbalancing my exercise. Yes.
What is your method for turning off your brain? Or is that even possible with Kim Perrell?
No, I haven't. My method for turning off is I have four kids. And the moment you get with four kids, you cannot think about anything else because they're all saying, mom, 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 mom. They want to show you something. So it's a complete switch off, which is amazing for me to have because, to your point, my brain is going all the time.
Yeah, that's great. You're big on social media, and I would suggest anyone interested in this conversation definitely follow Kim because she is giving out advice like crazy every day. It's awesome. But what's some advice you see on social media that you wish everyone would ignore?
I think that it's easy to be an entrepreneur and that there is such thing as an overnight success. There just isn't. Having been an entrepreneur for 20 years, there's no such thing as an overnight success. And sometimes it's glorified as I'm an entrepreneur, but the reality is it's not sexy. It's not sexy, sexy on when you exit after, a decade. But I think, and I wish more people would share and be vulnerable about how hard it is, right? And their mistakes that they're making so that we can learn from each other and grow from each other and be honest with each other about the truth about entrepreneurship. I mean, it's amazing, yes, but it is hard.
Yeah.
It is too hard.
So on our show, Elevator Pitch, we see you getting taking pitch meetings, but obviously you're an investor. You've invested in hundreds of companies. So let me ask you, an incredible person walks in with a meh idea, or an awful person walks in with an incredible idea. Who are you investing in?
Incredible. I invest in people first, 1,000%. I'm always looking at, especially at the early stages, because 99% of the business I invest in, they pivot, right? So I'm looking for the person that is optimistic, adaptable, flexible, going to find a way regardless of circumstance. And the idea, it always changes. So I'm less, I want to know there's a big market opportunity. You know, I invest in total addressable market, the TAM, the team, and usually the tech. And that's what I'm looking for. But if it, at the end of the day, it's like the founders who's going to, you know, who's going to make that happen.
That's awesome. So Kim, where, I just mentioned this, but where can people follow up with you? Where can they find out all things Kim Parrell?
Oh my gosh, please connect with me on social media at Kim Parrell, LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok, you name it, and come to Level Up. You can come, you can pitch me your idea. I can't wait. Level Up is Entrepreneurs' incredible first event in Vegas, August 22nd and 23rd. There's so many incredible speakers there, Dan. I can't wait to see you. We've got an incredible lineup. But I think more importantly, the most success I've had is getting in the right room. And being in a room like that, what we're creating in Vegas is a game changer for people that are looking to build businesses. Because surrounding yourself with the right people, that you cannot, there is no price you can pay. It is a priceless exercise. So I encourage anyone that's listening, come to Level Up. Pitch me your idea. I can't wait. I know there'll be a lot of investors there as well, looking for new opportunities to, you know, to make the bet on the next $235 million exit.
Awesome. So that's at entrepreneurlevelup.com if anyone wants to check out more info on that. And the book, of course, is called The Mistakes That Made Me a Millionaire. That's going to be out on August 12th, which is right about when this episode is dropping. So please check that out. And thank you, Kim Parrell. You didn't make me a liar. You brought the energy. You brought the fuel, the fire. I want to go start something now.
Let's go start something. I'm ready. We can co-create, Dan. It's game time. Game on. Let's go.
Awesome. Hey, what's the biggest hurdle that you feel like is getting in the way of your success? Let me know at howsuccesshappens.com at entrepreneur.com, and I will ask our next guest.